This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for being with us today. Wisconsin has the highest rate of incarceration among African-American men in the country, and the situation in Milwaukee is especially striking. WUWM has been examining the issue in our Project Milwaukee series on black men in prison. While the experts have their own perspectives on the causes and impacts of the large numbers of black men behind bars, we wanted to hear directly from the men themselves. So in this crossover edition of Real Talk with David Pate, our contributor on race and class issues and UWM professor joins Stephanie Lecce in the studio. Pate introduces us to Armando.
Armando's a 36-year-old man. He has a 9-year-old son. He's certified as a carpenter. He's someone who has lived in Milwaukee for the last 15, 20 years, and he's someone who has been formerly incarcerated. I think he has a very unique story in that he is someone also who has been unemployed for 2.5 years and has been really trying to do what we think is the right thing for his son and for the community. And I thought he could tell us a little bit more about what are some of the challenges he faces, what are some of the things he's doing to correct whatever wrongs he did in the past, but also what is some advice he can give to us about what is needed for men who are making a transition from being someone who was incarcerated to the community.
Well, Armando, welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Armando, I'd like to start by having you tell us your story.
Well, in 2002, I was charged with possession with intent to deliver a controlled substance, cocaine. It was a very small amount. I ended up receiving some probationary time to begin with, and then I had some conditioned time, which was 2 years in a state incarceration facility, which is parallel to the original sentence of what the judge gave me.
What would you say led you to commit these crimes? Were you even thinking about consequences when you were participating in these activities?
Yes. I think it became more or less the importance of the consequence. I mean, when you're dealing in an urban neighborhood where there's a large amount of violence and crime, I mean, just pretty much being able to come home safely, you know, was the first priority. Anything that happens in between that was something that was secondary, and that was kind of the mind state. Kind of one of those, it kind of comes with the territory, you know, type of thing. So if we're out here committing crimes, and we know that, okay, well, we could face some time for it, you know, it was kind of like almost in urban culture is almost, let's say, kind of an award to be able to go. I know it kind of sounds funny, but it's just one of those things. It became the mind state, like, you know.
It's normalized.
Exactly. Commonplace.
How long did you actually spend in prison?
2 years.
And the one thing you had said to me, Armando, when we were talking earlier, is that when you were younger, like 8, 9 years old, and your parents were living, you know, you were living in the Robert Taylor home, what were some of the things that you think may have influenced where you are now? Do you think there was any influence on your decision-making? Do you think there was any reason why you viewed the world slightly different than someone who might be listening would think?
The circumstances of my upbringing had a lot to do with it. Not so much as with my parents, my mother, but the environment that I was raised in. You know, me and my father are kind of estranged. I didn't have the relationship I would have liked to have with my father, but that's actually what made me a better father. I always tell my son that I didn't have my father like you have me. And it's helped me to actually grow. My mom, I can't say enough about her bringing us up in such a volatile environment, the job that she did. It's, as far as I can remember, there was always an issue of violence. There was always an issue of poverty. There was always this mind state where, you know, this is where we live. This is, you know, as far as it goes for us. And I think that kind of instilled in me along the way, well, you know, this is a part of who we are as a culture, you know, and it was not so much at the time thinking that it was a negative way of thinking, but it was just the process of thought, you know, coming from that type of environment.
You mentioned your mom. Clearly your mom wanted more for you, though,
yes,
than this. That's why she brought you up here to Milwaukee.
Yes. When we first moved here to Milwaukee, it was like it was a paradise, you know, compared to living in the Robert Taylor homes, you know, where there's urine in the hallways. We're staying in buildings that have 16 flights, and there's one in the middle and two on the sides. And in any given time, there were maybe 3 to 4 people per unit. So, you know, if you do the math on that, you know, we're living in buildings with thousands and thousands and thousands of people. So to come here and, you know, live in a 2-family home was something extraordinary for me, my brother, and my sister.
But you had also said to me that you witnessed homicide. Did you see? You didn't see that in Milwaukee. It was different. It was that much different.
Well, as I got older, I witnessed crimes of that nature. But my first crime that I witnessed was at 9 years old. We were living in Chicago, and it was actually an attempted homicide. There was a guy coming out of one building where we were on our way home, actually from school. He's chasing another guy out of the building, and he started firing shots at him. You know, at about this time, me, you know, my mom and my brother had got separated. My brother stood behind a fixture, because I can remember like it was yesterday. It was by the old DuSable High School. And my mom had me and my sister behind an old newsstand. And my brother's only reaction was to run back to my mom because he didn't understand what was going on. He may have been maybe 4 or 5 at the time. You know, so that was the very first time I've actually seen, you know, crime of that nature happen.
What do you say to people who might listen to your story and think, well, you had a very sad, very challenged upbringing, but you still could have made better choices?
It's always easier to say something from the bleachers. Unless you're actually there in those circumstances, you can always give and analyze assumption. But to actually be in those set of circumstances is totally different. Could better decisions have been made? Under certain circumstances, yes. But you know, we have this saying, well, when life gives you, you know, lemon peels, you make lemonade. So you do the best that you can and just hope that you can actually overcome the circumstances that you're in. I also pull from it for it being a learning experience. You know, I don't let the events of my life define me. You know, one moment, one instance in time doesn't make me who I am. It's actually learning from those decisions and moving on. You know, you keep one eye on the past and one eye on the future.
What has life been like after you left prison? I mean, do you think that you're able to move forward, to take that learning experience and really turn things around?
I think the more challenges that I go through, for me, myself personally, it makes me more determined. It hasn't been easy. I've ran into instances where, you know, I've had almost gotten employment until, you know, the question of the felony comes up, you know, and then there's some insurmountable reason given to me. Oh, well, you know, we found someone more qualified. The position just closed. But even too, we didn't mean to put the position up. So it's at first it used to frustrate me. But me being the type of person I am, I started to look deeper into the situation, you know, and I was able to actually, you know, work around these things.
How so?
And what has been some of the resources that have helped you to get to the point where you want to be able to take care of your kid or take care of yourself? Are there many resources in the city of Milwaukee for men like you?
There are resources. My personal opinion, unfortunately, those resources aren't put to the forefront. They have a lot of resources where, for the sake of terminology, is just kind of what they are, resources. You know, people come, you have an individual who explains what the resources are for and how to get it, and there's no support after that. So if you're not the type of person who doesn't just take no for an answer, then, you know, you could get pretty much lost in the shuffle. And I see a lot of that going on with most of the people that I know. Ironically, are felons, and on the same token, most of the hardest workers I know are felons because they have more something to prove than the average person.
Men, parents need a job. So are there really job placement services that work in the city? I mean, there are temp agencies, but what do you do for money? I mean, I know you're getting W-2 mm-hmm. right now, but what is there to get you beyond a W-2 job?
Well, for me, myself, personally, and this is kind of one of the things I kind of took from being on the streets, it's not in any way condone selling drugs or committing illegal, illicit acts, but it's a sense of entrepreneurship. So right now, the reason I'm taking my training, I'm a certified carpenter, and I'm also about to start training in the removal of hazardous materials, is I want to go into business for myself. America is a spawning place for small businesses all over the country, you know, especially with the market now. One thing that kind of bothers me, though, is everyone's talking job, job, job. I'd rather have people saying career, career, career. Career is long term. Career is stable. You know, jobs, as we know, just looking every day are vanishing like that. So I'd rather them get people conditioned to do more of a career-phased market versus just having a job. I can get a job at Burger King. You know, I can get a job at the car wash. You know, I want something that can help support me and my family, send my kids to college, you know, make sure I prepare life insurance plans, things of that nature.
And yet that all starts with getting employed in the first place.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
How do you convince a hiring manager to give a person with a record a chance?
Well, you have to become what I've learned is become a marketable person. You have to learn how to market yourself. I've actually spent time, you know, doing research to find out the best ways to take an interview, those questions that you should expect as a felon, and the way to respond to those questions. You know, when you make yourself seem more of an asset to the company and not make this small infraction in your life be the subject of the conversation, then you become that person. You become that person they need. And plus, just as a tip for some people, when an employer asks me, well, you know, why should I hire you? I tell you, well, because it's cost effective for you. You know, it costs a lot of money to go out and, you know, post up jobs and have interview after interview after interview. So, you know, these are some of the tools that a person and what I think is self-motivation. You have to be motivated. Even if you're told no, you should never think that it's no. It's just not right now. So for some guys, I think that they have to keep their focus on what their goals are. For me, the challenges have only made me stronger because I know what I want. I know, you know, where my goals are, and I know where I want to be.
How much of a role does your son play in your future direction?
My son plays a large role. I already have a lot of things planned for him. I mean, you know, he loves soccer, and it was kind of funny that, you know, I asked him what sport he wanted to play. And, you know, usually, you know, amongst African-American males, it's either football or basketball. When he said soccer, I'm like, whoa. And I was discussing this with one of my associates, and he was telling me, you know, soccer is a good field. There's a large amount of revenue in soccer, and plus, you know, he'll do what he loves. He keeps me focused a lot. I have a picture of him around my neck that I carry with me all the time. And because I didn't have my father around like I wanted to, you know, it brings me a lot of satisfaction that I can be the father for him that I wanted. You want better for your kids than you have for yourself. But we talk every day about responsibility. We talk about being honest. You know, we talk about consequences. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So it's that's how I address the situation to him.
If you could make a recommendation to the city of Milwaukee for people like yourself, what would be your recommendation for them to make your life a little bit easier?
I think that the whole system needs to be revamped. I think they need to take a step back and kind of look at the resources that are out there and see if these resources are being utilized and make sure that the wheels aren't just spinning without getting any traction. I think that education, first and foremost, needs to be focused on more because we're steadily losing ground on education, and it's happening earlier and earlier and earlier. I see a lot of that. When I was growing up, you know, I actually started out in Head Start. You know, I started out in early education. I do believe to this day that helped a whole lot with who I am now, you know, being able to learn things early on. More advocacy on reading. You know, we have a lot of individuals out there who are borderline illiterate. Their literacy skills aren't up to par. You have to have great literacy skills to go out and actually fill out an application. You know, I've actually had to help individuals fill out because they didn't understand what a word was or didn't know how to spell it properly. If you can't do that, you're not able to put together a resume. I don't think that there is any one set thing to focus on. I think it's kind of like a watch. A good Swiss watch has a lot of moving parts, but all these moving parts work together to make one action. And I think that's kind of the approach that the city needs to take, is look at all the moving parts in order to make that one action beneficial to everyone in my position.
So is it prevention, trying to keep men away from committing crimes in the first place? Or do we also need resources on the back end of things, of helping men who have been in prison?
Well, I always believe, you know, one of my philosophies has become being proactive instead of reactive. Because if you could prevent something in the beginning, then you won't have to worry about reacting to it when it happens. As far as they used to have during my time of incarceration and under state supervision what was called reintegration into society or reintegration project. And one of the things that struck me that was kind of odd about it was that a lot of the times when I would go to see my probation or parole officer was that I wasn't getting the proper assistance I needed to keep me out of the system, to keep me out of trouble. All I had was, you know, pretty much someone watching over me to make sure that I didn't stay out past a certain time. You know, there wasn't anything. I mean, I can remember several occasions me bringing in job or career opportunities that the supervisor or the officer had no idea about. You know, I presented to them and they would have this kind of look on my face like, you know, hey, what is this? You know, I didn't know anything about it, you know, and I'm feeling like, well, you should. This is something that may actually be a game changer for me. This is something that you, as being someone who, quote unquote, is hired to supervise me and to make sure that I integrate back into society a proper way, something that you should be abreast of. And a lot of that isn't going on.
But people would say, why should we invest in men who have committed crimes, who clearly have made bad decisions in the past? Why should we put money toward helping them fix those mistakes?
Well, I think it should be looked at on a case by case basis, because every crime isn't the same. There's talk going on now about maybe changing some of the rules that involve nonviolent crime versus violent crimes, and even taking it a step further. How long has it been since this person actually committed a violent crime, if that was the circumstances? You know, if it's been 10 years down the line and within those 10 years this person haven't had any trouble, then I think that should be revisited. Plus, you know, once again, some of the hardest workers that I know are felons. You know, they made mistakes, you know, and everyone makes mistakes. You know, some may be a little heavier than others, but investing in these individuals is just like investing in the infrastructure of America, because these are individuals who get up every day at the break of dawn, are able to work, and are able to bring income to their families. When you have a better quality of life, it actually cuts down the chances of this person committing another crime. There's no reason to go out and commit a crime if all the bills are being paid. You know, you're sending your son or your daughter to good schools. You know, you're on your way to purchasing a home. With all these things, I don't think any person in a mentally stable position would actually go out and commit another crime.
Well, Armando, thank you so much your story. And David Pate, thanks so much again. We'll join you again next month for Real Talk.
Yes, thank you.
Armando is a Milwaukee father who lives on the city's north side, who asked that his last name not be used. After serving time in prison, he's been out of work for more than 2 years, but recently got his certification to be a carpenter. David Pate is our Real Talk contributor, as well as an associate professor at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UWM and founder of the Center for Family Policy and Practice. They spoke with Stephanie Lecce. Milwaukee has another finalist for the James Beard Award, given to the best chefs in the country. We'll learn what makes this such fertile ground for culinary talent when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.